Access number 30,002, which is Eric Harrison, reel 10. So what happens then when you get to Karachi and then go on to Pune? What's happening?
Can I just backtrack a little bit on that? Flying from Melton Mowbray to Castel Bonito, they dropped the bomb on Nagasaki and the war ended. And I was flying out to India to join Bomber Command to become involved in the war against Japan. And we were a bomber squadron in Salbani, and we were bombing, you know, Japanese positions.
So what was VJ Day like?
I spent VJ Day in Pune.
And what happened?
Well, I won a cup for the tug of war. I teamed up with the tug of war team, and
I relieved were you that the war was over. I mean, how did you? That's the end.
Yes. Well, we thought immediately. We thought that we would get recalled to base. That they'd tell us to turn round. We weren't wanted out in India. But in fact, when we got to Salbani, we found.
You were sent to Salbani to join 355.
When we got to Salbani, we found that the squadron had been changed from Bomber Command to Transport Command. And they wanted us to bring troops back from Malaysia. Particularly prisoners of war, who'd of course had one awful time under the Japanese in the fall of Singapore and general Malaysian wartime encounters, and we had all these people to bring back. So I didn't do any bombing work there because there wasn't a war on them. It was peacetime conditions.
So you were flying troops and POWs. How many could you take it's a Liberator, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we'd only take half a dozen, but we were taking mainly supplies down. The main purpose was to take supplies down there of all kinds, you know, that there was no food, and we were taking stuff down in that connection, and with a bit of space, bringing people back. Half a dozen people at a time back, and then they were put in hospital in India and checked over and sent back to England.
Was it POWs or was it ordinary troops as well?
No, it wasn't ordinary troops.
Mainly POWs.
Mainly POWs, yeah.
And what state were they in?
Pardon?
What state were they in? Did you see
they were, you know, very malnourished and.
Where were you flying to and from? You're in Salbani. I'm not sure where Salbani is.
Yeah, well, it's in just outside Calcutta. And we were flying down to a place called Pegu in Burma, which was just north of Rangoon.
And anything happened or anything you remember about those trips?
Well,
you seem to do a fair number of times. You're doing them into November.
What was my last trip?
Last trip, 29th of November.
Of November?
And then you have a flight in December, 5th of December.
Yeah, well.
I'm not sure what that is.
That's
only 2 hours.
What happened there was that people were getting demobbed. And we all had our demob number. At that time, mine was number 37, so I was due for demob fairly early on, really. And I became very friendly with the adjutant on 355 Squadron, and the adjutant had a much earlier release group than me, and he wanted to be released, but they had a policy that people in the key positions wouldn't get demobbed unless they got a replacement, and they weren't sending replacements out. There was no need to send people out because people were coming back, and so he had to find a replacement. So he asked me if I would like to be his assistant, and I said I'd love it, because I didn't really enjoy my flying because of being ill.
I think you were all right in the Liberator.
But I was okay in the Lib. I'd been fine in the Lib. But I still had, in the back of my mind, I had a feeling that, you know, I should come off flying because the war was over. And I'd only joined to help in the war. So I had pretty good reasons for not flying. So I said, yes, I'd be his assistant. Anyway, it was arranged that whilst I was his assistant, at the will of the Royal Air Force, they couldn't stop my flying pay. So I still got paid as a flight lieutenant navigator, and navigators got the same pay as pilots anyway. So I didn't lose my flying pay, so I was doing quite well. And then after a month, he told the wing commander that he considered I was good enough now to take over as adjutant. So I became the squadron adjutant after about a month.
What were your duties as squadron adjutant? What did it mean? What were you doing?
Well, my main duty was to provide a jeep. I had a jeep. A personal property of mine was the jeep. And I had to supply the jeep to the cricket team. And that meant that I got a game of cricket. I wasn't good enough to play, really. But I did have the means of transport for five or six people. And so I played quite a lot of cricket. And the cricket we played around there, as you can imagine when I tell you, is that it was generally against railways. And because the railway people were very big in India, and there were all bits that ran the rail. They did the main jobs. I mean, they didn't go along and lay lines and things like that. The Indians did that, but they all had the key positions. And so we played at lots of railway cricket clubs around the area. And I don't remember doing very much more than that, to be honest.
That
would
be an
interesting running the Well, we had an orderly room. And you know, in the orderly room, there was a sergeant who was looking after the orderly room, who was a peacetime serving airman anyway. They got on nicely without me.
So the admin was done by them, really?
Yeah. We were mainly involved in getting people back to Britain. I have read history books since, telling me what happened at Salbani, and I thought to myself, I don't remember that. So,
what's meant to have happened? What are you talking about? It's telling me.
Well, you know, nothing in particular, but just sort of squadron people writing their life story and sort of about the Far East, which I've read. And they've sort of said that they were at Salbani in such and such a date. And we moved from Salbani to Digri, which was just a satellite station fairly close by. And then we moved from Digri back to Salbani, and I did both those removals, you know, which was quite a big job. I remember doing that, but, I mean, I did nothing personally. I just helped to organise it, and they needed an adjutant. The previous adjutant, the one that I was friendly with, he'd never, you know, this is a copy of my 228 squadron. All
it's
that.
It's a daily record, is it? Now, you wouldn't type that up, though.
No, but the one of the first things that happened to me as adjutant was that the SEAC, Southeast Asia Command, wrote to me and said that we haven't had your daily record for the last 6 months, and this adjutant had never done it. And so I said to them, well, you know, the guy that should have done it's gone home on demob. And they said, well, we need the record. And I did my best to fight it off, and in the end the CEO said to me, you know, you've lost the fight, you'll have to do it. And I had to go around pilots and ask them to get the logbooks out, and I would tell them that that we raided such and such a place on certain days, and they'd say, well, how many planes were involved in the raid? And I would have to ask the pilot, how many do you think there were? And he'd say, well, there'd be about 9 or 10 of us or something. And, you know, how many aircraft did you lose? Oh, I don't know. Was that the one? Was that the one where we lost 2 aircraft, Tom? And this took a lot of my time up. And in the end, SEAC wrote to me and thanked me very much for doing the job and sending it in. But, you know, people are using that today, that sort of thing today, for historical matters in connection with service life. I mean, I use that 2 or 3 times a month.
That's a
2261. I look it up, you see, and now if somebody's looking mine up for 355 Squadron, because it was during the war. The war hadn't finished out there then. The period that I did, and
you wrote up, yes.
You know, I think to myself, well, I hope nobody's using it, but there must be. Historians are using it. You can go down to Kew, to RAF Records in Kew or wherever it is now, and you pay so much, you pay about £3 for a sheet, and you can get a copy of each sheet, and I got these all for nothing.
What was life like out there? I mean, was it enjoyable or what, conditions?
Well, in direct contrast to America, I was in India for 8 or 9 months, and I never once went into anybody's house. Nobody ever entertained me. I never got anywhere near the civil population. Many times we weren't allowed to go into Calcutta. It was out of bounds because they were fighting for independence, and any Brits that they saw with uniforms on, and we had to wear uniform. Any Brits they saw, they'd throw bricks at them and do what they could to.
So there's 2 things there. So who was friendly? You wouldn't expect the Indians to invite you to their home, but you mean that the European population didn't invite you to their home?
Why shouldn't the Indians? I mean, the Americans invited us. The local Americans invited us. Why not the local Indians? I've got Indian friends here, but
given the internal security situation, what you're actually saying though is that the European population, which was large, British, they didn't.
I never went in their houses either. No.
So they were equally unfriendly.
Yeah. Of course, so they would be.
So,
yeah.
So it's just everybody. The Indians are unfriendly. The Europeans are.
Yeah. They didn't want us there. That's what it amounted to, but. You know, if we hadn't been there, the Japs would have got into India. They weren't far off it anyway.
Now, anything else about your time out there before you brought home? You seem to finish in April, 46.
And I went out in August.
Anything else happened?
No, not a lot really. It was very much a camp life.
What was a typical day like? What was lifestyle? You know, what would you do?
Sunbed. Spent a lot of time playing deck tennis outside the huts. When I had to go to work daily, but I did have some months when I just flew, and we'd fly one day and have the next day off or a couple of days off. And we had football matches every afternoon. It would be England versus Scotland one day and Scotland versus Wales another day, and we just had to make our own fun. We had tennis courts and I played tennis. I mean, my cartilage job can't have been affecting me because I played tennis. I played hockey even. But I used to, I wasn't much good at these things. I used to get my place because I had a Jeep.
Yeah, so tell me about your demobilisation. When did you, what happened? You seemed to finish there in April.
Well, I came back to England and I was demobbed straight away.
Do you remember the trip back?
Yeah, I came back by boat. on the a castle line. I don't remember which castle it was.
Doesn't matter. And that was April, was it?
Yeah, it would be.
Anything about the trip?
Just that I got impetigo, sleeping on the ship decks because it was too hot in the cabins.
Now, what you were demobbed when you got back, April. Mm. And what was the demob procedure? How did it, how did they sever their connection?
Well, we just had medical examinations just to see if we weren't bringing any disease in the country. We were kitted out with a suit and a hat and a Macintosh and various items of clothing. It was only a day or two of that, I think.
Now, what were you going to do? I mean, that's the question. You know, you come out of the, you know, you come out of the RAF. You're an officer now. Yeah. You were an officer when you went in, but what were you going to do? Because you'd been a chemist, hadn't you, in the paper mills?
Well, I did.
And then office work in the paper mills. You know. Mm. But what was that? What you wanted to do? What did you plan to do?
Well, I did apply for a permanent commission in the RAF. And the communications in India with UK were virtually non-existent. And I never got a reply to my application. There were people who were in England, if I'd applied in England at the end of the war to have a permanent commission, they would have either said yes or no, and that would be after an interview. I never heard anything at all.
And why do you want to stay in? I
wouldn't have stayed in as aircrew, I don't think. I would have probably stayed in as an adjutant. I'm not sure about that because I didn't get that far.
But so it was just an idea.
I'd had a good living. I'd been well paid for a couple of years anyway. I saved quite a bit of money when I was in India. We got an overseas allowance and I'd saved quite a bit of money, and I was used to a good style of living, and I wanted to do the best I could for my wife, and that seemed to me to be quite a good thing to do.
Now, when that fell through, what were you going to do then? Go back to the...
Well, I wanted to go into salesmanship. And whilst I was at Pembroke Dock, I did do an out-of-university course in salesmanship. But when I got posted out of the Bahamas and then to India, I never did it anymore. And it just passed into oblivion. I don't know if I ever wrote my tutor. I had a special tutor that I used to submit my work to. And I just don't know how it ended, but it was because of being overseas. While I was in India, we had to apply for to be registered for voting because there was going to be a general election.
Hang on, can we stick to... We've sort of gone past that. I'll come back to it, but, I mean, can we stick to this point of what you're going to do?
Yeah, okay, right. Well, I went back to the paper mills. I went back in the selling department.
As a salesman?
Yeah, but not as an outdoor salesman, but as selling for people ringing up inquiring about things, and I would deal with such matters. And I tried a number of jobs. I tried to get a work for Bibby's.
So you didn't stay at the paper mill long?
I stayed at the paper mill from 46 to 54.
That's a fair while.
It took me 8 years to get out, and I tried like anything to get out, to get various jobs, but having no experience at outdoor selling was the thing that stopped me getting jobs. What I wanted to do was to get a job as a rep somewhere. And eventually I did get out as manager of a paper paper bag factory that there was in Hartlepool. I mean, I was lucky that the person that employed me gave me the chance because I had no previous experience. But it turned out that in future years, I was only with them 6 years, but it turned out that the reason why he'd given me the job was because I'd been an adjutant in the RAF. And as such, in a position of authority, and which I'd carried out okay, and he thought, well, you know, I can't do any better. I want to employ a local man. It wasn't a local company, it's a company called Coverall, which was a London company. The head offices were in Tottenham Court Road. And
so you were a travelling salesman for them?
No, I was the manager of the factory, but I did a lot of selling. I used to, you know, leave my job in managing and go out and meet people from Marks and Spencer's and Woolworths and a lot of the big London companies. So I got quite a bit of experience in that respect. And I came over here to manage a paper mill agency company.
So in the end, you had a successful career in management.
Yeah, fairly.
Now, what was the thing you wanted to tell me about the vote? This is the general election of July 45.
Yeah.
What was that point?
Well, I didn't have a vote. And I'd applied for one from India. And whether other people applying never got one, I don't know. And he was me. I'd fought in a war for 6 years and I wasn't able to vote in the resulting general election. So my wife let me have her vote. And she said, no, I won't vote. You can tell me what to vote and I'll put the cross there. Well, one of the candidates putting up in Hartlepool was a chap called Vic. And he was a former Sunderland pilot on Sunderland flyboats. So I voted for him. And he was a Liberal. And that's the only time in my life I've voted other than Conservative.
And the other point about is your disability.
Yeah.
Tell me about, because I think that's probably where we'll finish. What about your disability and the pension you got? When did that start?
Well, I think I started off with a 30% disablement.
No.
I didn't.
When did you start?
It has always limited me, sport wise. I had to pack up playing golf because of it, and cricket I packed up because I couldn't run in the outfield and I wasn't pulling my weight. But I was able to perform. And it gradually got worse and worse as I got the cartilage would lead to osteoarthritis. As the osteoarthritis took over, that was when I became immobile and I had to have a new knee. And that was about 18 years ago. Now, for some years, like 4 or 5, I didn't apply for a pension, but I found out that any war disablement would qualify me for a pension. So I applied and I got 30% for one knee.
When was that?
And that would be, say, 18 years ago.
Would be 1989.
89, yeah.
And then how has it progressed since then?
Well, it's just gradually got worse. And I've now been, after a battle, I've managed to get reassessed at 70%. I mean, that because I had a second one done, and then a third one done. And the each one has increased my disablement. So I'm now classified as 70%. I'm quite happy with that, but I felt very much affronted by the RAF. I mean, I've been twice in front of tribunals, and, you know, at my age, 2 years ago, having to go in front of a tribunal, none of whom had ever served in the services or been involved in the war, telling me what I should do and what I shouldn't do. I've had private opinions passed, and people have said that once said to me when I was applying for reassessment from 40%, he said, well, don't take any less than 70. And they awarded me 50. And so I went in front of another tribunal a bit later on who didn't do it and who didn't increase it. And recently I didn't go in front of a tribunal. I have been in touch with them by letter, and they have increased it to 70%.
Are they medical tribunals, or are they, just doctors?
Well, there was a surgeon on, and what the other people were, I don't know. But it comes under the Lord Chancellor's office, and they actually sent somebody up from London, from the Lord Chancellor's office in London.
Now, just to finish, what associations are you a member of? You're a member of a squadron association, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm president of it now.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, it was round about the time that people were celebrating the end of the war, which would be 96, wouldn't it? The 50 years.
95.
95, yeah.
Which squadron association is it? Don't worry too much about the details. Just tell me what
228 Squadron Association.
And what does it do? What do you do with it?
Well, I started it, and as a result, I became secretary of it, and I was secretary of it for 18 years. And eventually, when I packed it up last year, and said my name wasn't going forward, and we had the annual meeting, and at a reunion which we have every year. They said to me, we've made you life vice president. Life president, not life vice, life president.
And how many are in the association?
There's about, at the moment, there's about 90.
Is it just wartime, or is it subsequent?
No, the squadron was disbanded in... We have a lot of peacetime people. As they call them now, cold warriors. We have half of them, more than half of them now are cold warriors, but when we first started 18 years ago, I would have think that there were more than half of them were wartime people, but they've died off.
And what does the association do?
Nothing. Nothing.
Yeah. An annual...
We have an annual reunion where they meet old friends. And in some cases, in one case particularly, I actually put two people together at a reunion through them both joining the association and being at a reunion and met each other. And they were in the dinghy and being shot down in the Bay of Biscay the last time they were together. And one of them had eye trouble and the other had orthopaedic trouble. One had been to an eye hospital and the other had been to an orthopaedic hospital, both discharged as unfit from the RAF and never ever met each other after they were rescued in the dinghy. And they were with each other at this reunion, and they couldn't thank me enough for the fact that I'd been able to put them together. And I've been able to put a lot of people together.
Have you met many of your own crew?
Well, I lost my crew, you see.
Sorry.
And so I, in a way, that was why I started it, because I started the association. There was nothing in mind about reunions and things like that, but I wanted to meet people that I'd flown with, and it eventually got down to annual reunions at Pembroke Dock. But now we go anywhere now, because... A lot of the people didn't fly from Pembroke Dock, they flew from Newquay, St. Morgan. And we have one chap who was a helicopter pilot at Beverley when the squadron went on to helicopters, but they disbanded the squadron about 1956. And so there are people who joined short service commissions and joined the RAF as a career from 46 onwards. And they're the people that are... who go to the reunions now. I mean, we get about 60 at a reunion with wives, and if we've got wives. And
thank you very much.